I told Beard if he was naked, I wouldn't judge him for the size of his dick. It didn't seem to matter to him.
Wait a minute, what?
Fans of the Pebble Watch can rejoice because it's not quite dead yet. There's a new OS that aims to keep Pebble Watches going forever, and it's called Rebel OS. I love open source. We could have had bets on this. We could have had a betting pool this was going to happen.
There was somebody who was going to pick it up and continue it?
Yeah.
What do you put Rebel OS on?
On your old Pebble Watches. So for those of you that don't remember, Fitbit came along and bought out Pebble and then announced that they were going to spin down Pebble's infrastructure. They got a bunch of pushback, so they extended it. But I think it's only extended to like June 30th of this year now.
Okay.
And then the Pebble backend shuts down, making the watch a lot less useful.
Sure.
It's like what happens when cloud services go offline.
Yeah, that's why I don't own any cloud services. Now, let me ask you this, though.
But I think this localizes it with Rebel OS.
Let me ask you this. Is there any other hardware, any other smartwatches that you could potentially get Rebel OS on? Because even if we've mitigated the problem, really we've kicked the can down the road, right?
Like, because the hardware is going to
wear out.
Yeah, the battery's going to go out or something like
that. And if I want to get into this, you know, I don't have a Pebble watch. How can I?
You know what would be great is if the next step is that Fitbit just released all of the specs for the Pebbles. So people could just like.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, though. Yeah. The reason they bought Pebble out is probably to keep them out of the competitive marketplace.
Maybe.
But what if you crowdfunded? Because, I mean, every one of those watches were successful crowdfunding wise, right?
Yeah.
What if you crowdfunded the next iteration of hardware, but had open source software that ran underneath and already had a proven infrastructure because it ran on the old Pebble watches?
I think, I don't know. Yeah, I think it could work. I mean, I'm surprised at the stuff that's getting funded these days. I didn't think the Librem 5 would make it. Librem 5 did make it. Mycroft 2.
Yeah, I saw that.
Is blown past its $50,000 funding goal. It's getting funded. Stuff is getting funded that I thought people would have been exasperated by.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I would be pretty interested in like a Pebble community edition or something. I don't know what you'd call it. A Rebel Watch. You couldn't probably call it Pebble.
Right. No, yeah.
The Rebel Watch.
Right.
Well, you know.
Have you ever used a Pebble?
Oh, yeah. I've owned two of them.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So I've only played with them. I've never owned one. But one thing I always thought made a lot of sense is on that small screen real estate, I never really felt like you could really fit a full functioning computer, which is kind of what the Android and the iOS watches try to do. But what appealed to me about the Pebble is everything was linear. You know, like it had that linear timeline kind of a thing. That does kind of appeal to me.
Other watch manufacturers are starting to rip that off now.
Oh, really?
Apple ripped that off. And
sure.
I think that was actually one of their best sort of innovations in that UI.
Wow. Actually, you know who came out with it first? Google Glass. Had the timeline, you could swipe on glass and go, oh, these were where I took these pictures, I had these notifications.
Oh, yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah.
So, as it translates to the Pebble, it was really awesome.
I could see that. What were you going to say, Beard?
I was just going to say, as long as we're coming up with crazy crowdfunding ideas, where's my new community-focused WebOS phone?
You know,
it's on your LG TVs.
So I was just going to say they demoed a lot of that gets demoed at all of the different conventions. But WebOS on a TV, that's a sexy thing. Like WebOS still.
I've heard it's the best.
Yeah. How many operating systems do we have for a TV now that Canonical has?
Well, but you've actually gotten the worst thing. You have all these stupid, crazy phone or TV guys making operating systems with horrible interfaces.
And have no idea what they're doing. Yeah. And then you don't really get any standardized app infrastructure because, like you said, everything's
all security.
Different.
So I think WebOS is kind of, I don't know. I mean, it kind of makes sense in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets you, I would think if I was LG now, it's an easy way to write apps, easy way to update my TV OSs. But it's not coming to devices like other than TVs anytime soon.
I heard rumors that they were going to relaunch the Palm brand and try to bring back WebOS. And or
what, dude?
Mesh it with Android.
No.
There's a whole group of people that were talking about it.
You know what I want to see? I want to see like really, really, really good Nokia phones come back.
Oh, yeah?
And I want to see flip phones, too.
But doesn't Microsoft own them?
Well, it's kind of funny how that worked out. Like there is still this Nokia division that after a certain amount of time went by is allowed to get back into the phones.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, all right, here's a winning strategy. Okay, you ready for this? Well, I don't know. So here, this would have been a winning strategy had BlackBerry not picked up. Have you seen the Key One?
The what?
Google it. Key One. BlackBerry Key One.
Oh,
this
okay.
is phenomenal. It is an Android-based phone with USB-C, flagship Android phone, but physical QWERTY keyboard and has gesturing on the keyboard itself. So you want to swipe for one page, you can swipe across the keyboard with your finger and go back pages, go forward pages.
Boy, that is an ugly sucker.
Yeah, but think.
But who cares if it's a BlackBerry? It's
right, exactly. Yeah. It's about, you're the business guy and you spend a lot of your day, like I do, spending a lot of time emailing. You've received texts from me.
Yeah.
God help you. And so how many times you never read the text message I sent you. You have to interpret what I meant to, what I was trying to communicate. I mean, that's the truth. So imagine something like that where I can actually physically type something. That would be great. But going back to your Nokia thing, what if Nokia got into the hardware-based smartphones for older people that want a solid physical phone, want to get into some of the Android apps, but don't want to deal with a big shiny smudge print
thing? I want a well-built Nokia flip phone running Android.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
When you flip it up, it's got an edge-to-edge screen. It's going to be smaller,
yes,
but it's edge-to-edge.
Maybe 4 inches, 4.3 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree.
And one feature style. They have to make work. The one feature they have to get working is that thing has to hang up the second you slam it shut.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And put some screen reinforcement in there for those times when that call was really bad. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm done with you. It just doesn't feel the same, especially on Android where it's a little laggy. It doesn't feel the same when you're like, bye. Hang up. There we go.
What's your next phone, Beard?
Well, I was going to say, you know, what's interesting is there's rumors that Samsung's next phone is a flip phone.
That's not rumors. They have.
I got to look this up. Really?
No. I think they already have them in China, don't they? China and Japan.
I don't think so.
I was picturing Nokia. That'd be nice, or Motorola. Oh, I see. That's not. I'll put a link to this in the show notes.
I don't think that's just a rumor. I'm thinking that's an actual device. I think they have some. I think they're selling.
Yeah, and it's got Bixby built in too, guys. Yay. It's got Bixby. I'm putting a link to this in the show notes. This is pretty cool. It's got a screen on both ends. I don't really need that, but...
The Samsung W2018?
Yeah. Yeah. With a 4.2-inch full HD AMOLED front display and then a 4.2-inch full HD inner display.
And apparently a very wide aperture camera lens.
That would be nice. You know, the only thing about a clamshell is, at least in my mind, clamshells are more durable. And so when you put an edge-to-edge glass screen like that on the front of it too, I'm not as comfortable tossing it in my cup holder when I get into my vehicle.
Right.
And I want
throwing it down on the couch, throw it in your pocket.
Yeah, toss it
in. Okay, think about that for a second. You have keys, you got coins, all this stuff in your pocket. If you could fold your phone up and it could be in its own little turtle-protected shell, God, that'd really be something.
Something with USB-C too.
Right.
Yeah, trust me. Yeah. I know how rough you are on phones. I'm the recipient of your old S6.
Yeah.
The S6 was relatively good order. He got sick of that very quickly.
But I still managed to crack the back of it because it's all glass.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. But that's all I did, just crack the back. So the front screen's still good. But I think what happened is, like, I got out of a car and it was one of those things.
The day that your case came. Do you remember that?
Yep.
The day that your case, he orders a case and the poor guy literally, it was either hadn't been delivered yet or had just gotten delivered.
Yeah,
you're getting out of your truck.
It was on the porch. The box was there and I'm getting out of it. And because it's a glass back and there was just a tiny pebble on, if it would have hit the cement flat, I think it might've been okay.
Uh-huh.
But because the corner of the phone hit on top of a tiny pebble.
Right.
And then it splintered. It just, that was pretty depressing because it was new enough where, like, you know, you get the phone and then like 2 days later you Amazon the case and the case arrives and
right after you get over the initial brunt of the
expression. So when I got the that was when I told myself I'd never do glass phones again.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Except for now I have a glass phone again because
that's not glass on the back though, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is because
but you have a case.
Right. I immediately got a case before the phone arrived this time.
Can I see it?
So I took the phone out of the box and I put it in the case, but the glass back makes it wirelessly charged. And so,
sure.
You know, yeah. So I just immediately took the phone out of the box in the case and I don't even want to worry about it. The glass back thing just stresses me out. I can't wait till they get to ceramic. I'm hoping. Last.ting.com. Go there to support the show and take $25 off a Ting device, or if you bring a device, $25 in service credit. It's the way to do mobile. It's like a life hack for your cell phone, a smarter way to do mobile. If the industry hit the reset button, this is how they do it. Pay for what you use wireless. Minutes, messages, and megabytes, whatever you use, that's how much you have to pay for. It's $6 for your line. That gets you a phone. And then you got Uncle Sam's cut. You whatever that is in your locale, that's how much you're going to pay. It's amazing. It's a great way to travel, too, if you need a device while you're traveling. And they have CDMA and GSM networks to choose from, a control panel that puts you in control where you can check your usage, set alerts, turn devices on and off. And speaking of devices, with a CDMA and a GSM network, you've got both to choose from. Pick whatever is better in your area. And I'm going to recommend an awesome post by Ting. Start by going to last.ting.com. Support the show. And you get $25 in service credit or off a device. And check this out. Hack your phone plan, a smartphone plan, for under $20 a month. It's pretty great. They have a whole post on how it's really $16 a month, but then tax brings it up to about 20 bucks a month. It's really possible with Ting's flexible pricing model. And they'll outline how you can pull it off. And you know what I realized? I do actually most of this. A couple of quick refreshers on here, and it's actually, I think, going to be even better. Check it out. Last.ting.com, a smarter way to do mobile. Sign up, support the show, and start saving money. Last.ting.com.
So I was just sitting here, not wearing any pants, and this hoodlum, he walks into my house unannounced.
You didn't knock, dude?
We had a Telegram conversation prior to this, and I said, I'm at the airport, I'm doing this. I didn't realize I was supposed to tell him, like, I'm pulling up. I'm like, I'm here now.
Well, you never know. Like, when somebody says they're at the airport, you don't know if that means an hour or 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, I gave you, what did I give you? I gave you a 3/10 of a mile heads up or something, but, yeah.
So what? So the first time you see Beard in months, he's like, you seen him like jump up to scramble to put pants on?
No, he had gotten his pants on by the time I got there. But no, he told me, he was like, can you let me know when you're going to be here? Because I don't want to be naked. And I'm like, sure. So then I telegram him when I'm like 3/10 of a mile out. And I'm like, hey, I'm pulling up, but I don't know exactly what your building is and which apartment and all that. And he goes, and he says, oh, I didn't realize you were coming over right now. And I'm like, well, it's been 45 minutes. Like, you know,
this confirms my wildest fears. You know this. My what? Wildest fears are now confirmed.
What?
That on the weekends when I wasn't around this place, Beard's just hanging out naked the whole time.
That's why is that a fear?
I'm just picturing my couch out there right now.
I never sat on your couch naked.
Yeah, sure. Now you say that. Of course. Thank you for telling that. Thank you for at least giving me that illusion. Anyways, continue on. So you show up at his house. How did that go, Beard? You know, did Noah make a mess of the place while he was there?
Oh, let's back up.
Oh, yeah, he destroyed it.
You're assuming I found his place without any problems, which of course you know.
Right, of course.
That's not a thing that would happen.
No.
I found the general idea, and he's like, go to building 2. So I'm counting the buildings. I find building 2. And then I think I had to turn around because I went past the part where you told me to go, Beard, right?
Yep.
And then he had to open the garage thing up with the magic key. Well, I bet that's the first time you've used that garage door opener.
No.
You got to load stuff, you know, when you're loading stuff. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's an easy way to load stuff.
Yeah, we had a car for the first couple weeks that we were here.
Oh, you did? Okay.
This is, this is now when you come into town now, you got to go visit Beard's place and Chris's place.
But his place is right on the way to your place. In fact, I actually told him when he's like, oh, wait, I was naked. And I was like, here's the thing. I can come back. Like, this is, if it's a bad time, because it's literally like you take the exit, you go down the street a little bit, and then there, right, he is.
Nice.
Just right off of I-5.
Yeah. But that's the thing now. Like, you got both places you're going to visit when you come into town.
Yeah, I have to.
Wow.
But he's not going to be there he's moving again in August, so.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see, Beer. We'll see. We'll see. Now, why are you here?
Well, I came to stare at your beard.
This is nowhere as nice as this. No, no, actually, you're here because Canonical's in town. That's really
That's
why
part
you're
of
here.
It. Yeah. I'd be lying if I didn't say I jumped at the opportunity to leave 30 below zero, though, to come where I can have just a spring jacket on and be comfortable.
It is pleasant. I let the dog out in the middle of the night, and I'm standing in my robe, and sure as shit, I thought of you. I'm out there standing outside in my robe, and I'm like, I'm actually comfortable right now. Yeah, I'm not even uncomfortable.
You'd be losing bodily appendages if you did that in North Dakota. No, you know, this is what's cool, is that Canonical, they take the time to make sure that their employees are talking and continuing a conversation.
Working together, because they're all remote workers
and
for
not
the most
just,
part.
Not just with them, but, you know, these last sprint, we saw Microsoft, we saw Slack, we saw industry leaders that were there working with the Snap team to make sure that there is tight integration between this containerization. And it gives me really high hopes for the future of Ubuntu development, because now this is the second one we've done in 6 months.
Yeah, know? And it's it is sort of their unique competitive advantage in a way, because you don't hear of a lot of other open source projects or companies that are doing this super regularly. Yeah. And so it's a kind of outreach that they can do for things that they have a passion on that is probably going to serve them well when it comes to things like Snap adoption.
Right.
Because I haven't heard like the Flatpak folks flying out Slack and Skype every 6 months and working on that stuff.
You know, it's funny. When we just started talking about this, in recent weeks, I've started to forget that there are other competitors to Snap packages. Like, it really does feel like Snaps have won the universe. And I know that's going to upset a lot of people. I didn't realize that's going to upset
where
a lot
you'll
of people.
Where you'll find Flatpaks reign supreme is in projects that are heavily connected to GNOME.
Okay.
So, you say you wanted to install the GNOME desktop, but you wanted to run beta versions or development versions of gedit or Evolution, you would overlay all that with Flatpaks now.
But those, I mean, eventually gedit, all those are going to be Snaps as well, if they're not already.
I don't know about that.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think this is ever going to be fully settled. The way I see this shaken out is when you go to download an open source project, or when you go to download like the latest cool Markdown editor for Linux, it's going to have a Windows button, a Mac button, and a Snap button.
That's right.
But a lot of open source projects internally, they're going to be using Flatpaks.
Sure, but it'll all be doubled up. You know what I mean? Like anything that has a Flatpak, it'll also be a Snap.
Yeah, probably. Any situation where like essentially like a PPA on Fedora would have solved the problem, that's where Flatpak, I think, will get used.
Yeah.
No, on Fedora. It's like Flatpaks are like PPAs for all distros in a way.
Right.
They're better than PPAs, but it's repo-based. You subscribe to that repository, then you can install the software that is listed in that repository.
And updates.
Yeah, and you get updates from that repository. It's very much like, you know, it at a conceptual level, definitely not an implementation level.
Yeah, right.
But at a conceptual level, it's a lot like a PPA.
Yeah.
Where a Snap is more akin to...
You lost me. The why PPA and Fedora?
I'm just saying the situations where you could use something that's where you could have like a whole repository of software and you want to have like, say you wanted to have the GNOME testing repository and you could have one repository and had all of the GNOME testing applications and you could as a user just elect to install one of them and then have it updated.
Gotcha.
So whereas Snap's like this single application is a Snap.
Yeah.
So an open source project that has 15, 25 components could have all of those components in a single Flatpak repository.
Sure.
And so it's sort of like which solution are you trying to solve? Mm-hmm. Are you trying to solve the delivery of a single application, or are you trying to solve maybe the overlaying of a test version of the GNOME desktop or like Firefox right now? If you want to run the client-side decoration version of Firefox, you got to go get a Flatpak.
So it feels like a lot of the people that are wanting to run a test version or something like that don't have a problem compiling from source and just running it from a different location.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Well, that's what a lot of people do. And I think that really where the universal, where the containerization comes into play is for laziness. Like, whether that is server side, I want to write once and run on all these different platforms.
Or you don't
want
to update your system for 2 years, but all of a sudden you need to run Discord.
And also don't want to worry about the security implementations, right? If I don't update that particular Snap for however long, that's fine. Yeah, I think, anyway, bottom line is, I think, well, I mean, you know, within reason anyway. At least you're not affecting, at least not all those other libraries that everything else depends
that's
on.
That's true, yeah.
But, you know, the point is it's cool that Canonical is doing this, and it's cooler yet that they've invited us to come be a part of it.
Yeah.
That we can kind of like kind of be, you know, flies on the wall.
So it's not only are we there to sort of see how they do outreach for Snaps, but the thing that I find to be particularly interesting is you watch this hybrid of a commercial company that is even ramping up their commercial interest, but is obviously stacked full of employees who are there because it's open source.
Right. And are legit community members.
Right. Like, very active in the community. Some of the people we met that work on the display stuff blow my mind.
Right.
Really. And the stuff they've been involved with over the decades is just, it's like, it's a list that, like, I'm like, how can they not talk about this stuff? Mm-hmm. I was Canonical and now they're talking about this. And that's the same story at Red Hat and a lot of other large Linux companies. Mm-hmm. There's these people in there that are there because it's Linux, because it's open source. Then you have the commercial side. And then the other thing that's really interesting about these Canonical events is they are, for the vast majority, everybody works remotely company.
Right.
They don't have – you don't go into the office every morning. Now, some of them do, but the vast majority of them don't go into an office. Mm-hmm. So the only time they're ever working with their coworkers is at these events.
Right.
And that is also particularly interesting to watch.
Yeah.
So they're really cool events to go to.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be recording all kinds of secrets and dirty things. We'll air everybody's dirty laundry. We'll tell you all the secrets.
Right.
That's what we do every time.
Yeah.
Because there's also, all those things are there to be had.
And in between all of that, then we'll do shows too. So that'll be really fun. Because I think the plan is
going to try
Coder,
yeah.
Linux Unplugged, Ask Noah for sure.
Yep. We're going to try to do them all three of them down there live.
Hello.
That will be good. Maybe we can pull a few people on mic. Of course, by the time this goes out, we'll have already have pulled it off or not.
Oh, really?
Because we're recording this ahead before we go down.
We'll pull it off.
So
we always, when you get both of us in the same room, we've set our mind to something, we'll pull it off. Here's the only thing. I got to grab your, you still have your headset somewhere, right?
My what?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. It's up at the RV.
Okay. We just got to go find it. Or, I mean, we can take mics too, but headset's kind of cool. Doesn't sound as good, but it's just kind of, we feel like radio guys.
Hey, man, as long as we look cool.
Yeah, exactly. So, Beard, what's new?
Not much. I moved.
Podcast professional. This is how this guy fills 6 hours of airtime right here.
Yeah,
it's true.
He can play a game.
Yeah, that's true.
During that, no, but have you talked about your place?
Yeah. Oh, you would know if you listen to the show.
Well, here's the thing. I'm guessing you didn't talk about your fancy security system that you have in place.
Oh, the fancy security system that I don't know how to use.
Yeah, that'd be the one. Like, he's got these modules on his wall, and I'm like, what's that? He's like, I don't know. What's that? I don't know.
You know, it's just built in.
I'm like, do these two things have anything in common? And he's like,
I've been told that there's a security system that I can't arm. I have been told no other information, including, you know, the arm code or anything. So I can't really use them.
That's good.
There's got to be somebody to ask.
That sounds pretty perfect, really. That's how a pre-bundled solution typically gets used.
Listen, I don't
care about these cloud services that call out to other people. I just use the lock to the door.
Exactly. I don't think it's cloud. But he's got like a legit, I don't want to call it a bachelor pad, but it's like a legit geek pad.
Like a geek den?
Yeah, dude. Like tables along the walls, computers every which way that I can see.
Of course, that's how I would demand it.
You know, and you know how he, because you've seen this, like if for anyone that hasn't ever seen the Beard, he has his monitors mounted high facing down at him. So it's kind of like he looks up at the sky, but instead of the sky, it's like a sea of very, very high resolution computer monitors.
Well, you just set the background to be a picture of the sky and solves both problems.
Yeah, I guess.
Nice, nice. I've noticed sometimes I do something to Noah that I think my kids do to me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And because, you know, you show up, we only got a couple of days. And so I gotta keep you on track.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got to keep you on target.
Okay.
And make sure we get certain things done. And I have discovered the best way to get that to happen is to tell you, oh, there's no way we're going to be able to do that. There's just no way we're going to get that done.
You know, if you say that to me, the very first thing I'm going to do is I'll like, oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Oh, you don't think we can get it done, huh? I'll show you can get it done. Who can get it done? I can get it done.
Yep.
Yeah.
It works perfectly. And even when I tell you that I know that, it still works. Because it just depends on how I slip it in there. I got to get you when your shields are down.
You know, really? There are certain – I have trigger points. And it doesn't matter when you say the trigger point, right? Like if you're like, well, we're going to use a Mac, the Linux isn't capable of that. Well, you know, I'm going to kill myself.
Noah's going to fly across the country.
I'll hire a developer if I have to. We'll make Linux do that thing. You know,
this is the problem once people get to know you well enough.
But the problem is it's code exploits. It's 0 days. We as humans have 0 days.
It is what it is.
That's what it is.
Wow. And my kids have started to take advantage of that.
I don't like people that do that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, like now yeah. I'm judging you a little bit. Like, but because here's what it is.
That's why I tell you I do it, to sort of like try to make up for it.
Yeah, but you're telling me this after you've done it. Like, I guess here's what it is. I
tell you every time.
It feels, I guess what it does is it feels a lot like a violation of trust. Because like once you start to learn where the person's exploits are,
right.
And then you use those exploits against that person in a lot of ways, like opening up and being open about that kind of thing. You're making yourself vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so then to have somebody take advantage of those vulnerabilities, that's kind of a violation.
That's why your shields are down, because they're on your
your friend.
They're on your team.
Right.
And
yeah.
So
he's got my back.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's why when they fire torpedoes, it is much more successful because the shields are already down. Whereas if it was somebody you expected it from and you had like defenses up,
yeah,
it wouldn't have even worked, let alone, you know, been as surprised.
It's funny you bring that up because I've dealt with that all my life, really. In fact, when I think about it, it's actually probably led to some serious trust issues. I had a lot of adults in my life when I was younger that would kind of follow that train. They were like, oh, I'm smarter, so I can tell him this or convince him of that.
Yeah,
and it would lead to these things. But, you know, I think where the difference is when you can analyze somebody's motivation. So, for example, your motivation is not that you don't actually think that we can do these shows at the beginning of the week or whatever. Your motivation is, you know, that we can. It's just you got to get everyone interested and amped up. And because I know what your motivations are and because I trust you as a person, in a way, it's not as offensive when you exploit those things. If it was something
we were going to do it, even if I didn't do that.
Right. Yeah, right. Even if you didn't say it. But, yeah. But when somebody approaches you and then you look back and you go, what was their motivation? Oh, it was all to benefit that person. They took something they knew about me and use it against me to benefit them. That is a very selfish action.
Yeah.
And I guess that's really where that burn is.
Well, and if it's somebody you trust, then it's like, well, when did they switch on me?
Yeah.
When did they flip over and start manipulating?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a particular bad thing. I've had that happen. I say it all the time when I worked at the bank, you know, where people were, that was a pretty common thing, is sort of like a political thing there. You know, everybody always, it's a reminder that everyone always has their own set of interests.
Yeah.
And that is a good lesson to learn in life.
Well, that's that.
Just got to learn it over and over.
Yeah, but even that is dependent on the person, right? Like, I mean, you know, like you and I, I mean, you know, just to use you and I, because we're both in the same room, so I'm not picking on anyone else. But like, you know, we try to take into each other. To an account each other's things. You know, if we go out for dinner or something, you'll be like, oh, you grabbed dinner last time, I'll grab dinner this time. Like, we're always kind of thinking about, you know, what's convenient. When I was staying here, you're like, oh, well, I can give you a ride so you don't have to pay for a rental car. But then I looked at my flight and I'm like, well, I take off at 7 a.m, so that would mean you'd have to drive down here at like 4. I don't want to make you do that. It's only, you know, whatever for a rental car, so I'll just get there. So, you know, just not being a jerk, I guess, is really the best way to summarize that. Not being a selfish jerk.
Yeah. It's like always trying. It's like the term is don't burn bridges, but that really is like when you're leaving.
Yeah.
But it's really more like
be considerate.
I guess. See, the thing is everybody has their own version of truth.
Yeah.
And so it's all a matter of perspectives, and each person creates their own. So it's a really difficult thing because sometimes people slip into it. They don't even realize it's happening. Because like my kids, when they do it to me, they're doing it because they want more juice, or like, you know, like it's really obvious. It's really obvious reasonings. And so I try to keep that in mind, that even when it's sometimes when somebody does that to you and it stings, I try to remember, well, everybody has their own version of truth. Everybody has their own reality, which is a hard idea to really, truly, fully wrap your head around.
Yep.
But I find that it does help me afford some understanding.
Yeah.
You see.
Right. Because you can understand what they're. Yeah. Go ahead.
I have responsible disclosure. For example, I tell Noah about his faults ahead of time, and that way, when I exploit them later, it's his fault.
I see responsible disclosure. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. You know, you've given your 90-day warnings.
Exactly.
And yeah, it just hasn't been patched.
Here's the thing. Beard is transparent enough, I always know when he's trying something.
LinuxAcademy.com/unplug. 7-day free trial when you go there and you support the show. LinuxAcademy.com/unplug. Sign up for Linux Academy's advanced training library that'll upgrade your brain. You know how you got to upgrade your Linux box sometimes? What about your brain, Noah? That's even more important than your Linux box.
You know, my mother used to tell me when I was a kid, she always used to say, knowledge is the one thing somebody can't take away from you. Like, it doesn't matter if you go to prison.
That's true.
It doesn't matter if you're stranded on some island. Whatever it is that you know, whatever you put into your brain.
Once you learn to fish,
you keep it everywhere.
LinuxAcademy.com/unplug. Self-paced, in-depth video courses in every Linux, cloud, and DevOps topic. Ooh. That's a lot of topics.
Hands-on
scenario-based labs. What's that?
What the hell are these guys doing here listening to us? They should be over there learning at Linux Academy.
I know. Shh, don't tell them that. Shh, that's
learn after the episode.
Right.
You can have your cake and eat it too.
Right, yes. You know what? Linux Academy is the platform to go to. They got full-time human beings ready to help you when you need them. Lots of study guides. Course schedulers for when you're busy. LinuxAcademy.com/unplug. Gentlemen, it's time for a little Ask Air, and I think it's been since the last time Noah was on the show that we did these. So, okay, hashtag Ask Air. This is from Joe Adams. Has technology made us too dependent? Boy, that's really the question right there. Are there any back-to-basic life skills that everyone should know for or when Google becomes self-aware? Or does that hamper our progress? What is the good middle ground as well? So has technology made us too dependent?
He's just asking the question, but I hate when people make this as an argument. Like, I hate when people are saying, like my mom does this with cursive, right? She says, well, you kids need to learn cursive because otherwise they're not going to know how to handwrite, right? And it's like there are certain skills and certain technology that have gone by the wayside. I don't know how to dig an outhouse. You don't know how to dig an outhouse. Are we too reliant on indoor plumbing? Or can we just accept?
Fair enough.
Can we just accept that is commonplace enough that it doesn't matter anymore? The internet in 2018 is like hot water. So can we just accept that that's an available thing?
I feel like smartphones are what's causing this question to come up because, you know, so a couple of days ago, I wasn't feeling well. And so it was Wednesday. And so I wanted to lay down and I set my phone on the charger and I lay down and I never fall asleep during the day. Mm-hmm. But I actually, right as I was drifting off, boom, notification comes in on my phone, which, stupid me, I didn't mark it as silent. Mm-hmm. Because it was a security notification. So it's like one that's allowed to go through that normally only goes off when there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. And woke me up. And I never fell back to sleep for the rest of the day. That happens every time I try that. Mm-hmm. Something like that happens. Like this piece of technology that I need to have and this alert that I typically would need to know about all happen to, you know, just fire right at their time so that way I don't get to take that one nap that I was going to try to take. Mm-hmm. My point is that I do think what happens is people have these things that they need in their life that they're dependent on that are also, they come with a lot of downsides.
Sure.
You know? And they feel like, well, I still have to have this even though it comes with all these downsides. So that's where the trap feeling comes, or dependent feeling.
I think compartmentalization goes a long way. So I have two smartphones now. I have a work smartphone and I have a personal smartphone. And then I also have a mission critical dumb phone just for bat line kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And the ability to choose how connected I want to be, you know, do I want to have Telegram and Slack and all that stuff? Do I just want text messages and phone calls, or do I just want phone calls? And that level of granular control goes a long way to be able to decide how connected, you know, I'm going to be.
Do we know what the middle ground is on this? He asked Beard, what's a good middle ground? I don't know. Go out in the wilderness every now and then?
I wouldn't know. What's the middle ground? I'm not attached to anything like that. I just wish Comcast would give me cheaper internet.
Dude, come on. I can't. Did he just say that? Am I listening to this?
I think he's being facetious. I think he's being a joker. Yeah.
Oh, he is.
He's joking.
Okay.
He's being facetious. Yeah. I mean, none of us really are really qualified.
I'll tell you what. Here, I'll go along with this challenge for a month if somebody else does it with me. I'll give up technology for one day a week. For 12, not a whole day.
Yeah,
like 12
I'm not
hours.
Doing
I don't ever take a day off a week.
Well, yeah.
You don't? Do you take a day off?
Yeah, I usually don't do anything on Saturdays. I need time to rejuvenate.
Saturdays are my least work days, but I still work a little. But last couple weekends, I've been like on this kick to like work on a project on my computer on Saturdays.
Oh, sure.
So I just been, I don't know.
Well, here's the other side of that too. Like, what can you do these days, especially in North Dakota where it's 30 degrees below zero outside? What can you do that doesn't involve some form of technology?
I do feel a sense though, like I do need to cut back a little bit. Like there is a sense because these things are they're constantly sending me notifications about crap.
You have cut back though. Like I've noticed,
I have, you're right, yeah.
I've noticed even like with how available you are on online media, you know, it used to be if I sent you a message, I'd probably get a reply if you weren't on the air within 15, 20 minutes. Now, it'll be a couple hours sometimes before you check your phone.
Yeah.
So I think you have cut back.
I have. Yeah, it's been nice.
I don't know. You know, and here's the other thing, too. I think we're asking the wrong question. Instead of saying, is there a happy medium? Is there too much technology? How do we cut back? What if we start asking the question, how do we arrange technology, set technology up so that it's a benefit to us rather than a downside? What if we were just connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, but we set it up in such a way that it was always to our benefit, never to the detriment?
It seems theoretically possible because we are the creators of the technology and we keep iterating. I've often wondered if we aren't living sort of in the most basic frustrating time where we haven't figured out voice recognition. We don't have artificial intelligence. We're just basically getting memory management figured out at this point in time and connectivity solid.
Yeah.
And then, but you know, take that three generations down the line and where those things have been fundamental for generation or two and the kind of things they'll be able to build will they'll have to thank us because we're bearing that weight
right now.
We are the very shoulders they'll be standing on. And so, yeah, we probably have in a way the best of times because we get to watch it from the beginning, but also the worst of times because it's the most immature. It's still in its infancy in so many ways. This technology is going to be with our society for as long as we have electricity. So we're really in the infancy of it all. All right. Speaking of that, Amid did a question directly to me, but then tagged it to Ask Air. He said, Chris, why do you have the hassle of a MiFi and a bridge in Lady Jupes? He says, take a look at this. It's a full-blown LTE router. It's a router with an LTE modem built right in. It has four LAN ports, does Wi-Fi AC. It has an external antenna if you a port if you want to hook up larger antennas. And it supports a 12-volt cigarette adapter.
Yeah. So why didn't you buy one of those and try that before it failed and then went to something else?
So, you know, I did try a couple of different things in Lady Jupes, and what I ended up with is it's – I can't remember.
Cradle Point.
No. Cradle Point is what I tried the longest, and now I'm on the – I can't remember. Shoot, I feel awful because it's a good brand, and I really should give them a plug. A Wi-Fi Ranger. It's a custom-made solution around the Microtech.
Yeah.
So it's a little Microtech with a power over Ethernet Wi-Fi antenna that puts your average Wi-Fi antenna to shame. This thing picks up Wi-Fi signals from 5 miles. It's I don't know if they'd be usable. And it, you know, actually, I've connected to a Wi-Fi signal that's a mile and a half away, and it's been usable, but that's the farthest I've gone. And so this sits on top of Lady Jupes, and it picks up all of the Wi-Fi networks around me, open and closed, A, B, C, and G, obviously. So that goes into the Microtech. Then the Microtech takes the input of my MiFi, which it connects to over the Microtech's Wi-Fi, which is great because I can use this Wi-Fi Ranger, huge Wi-Fi, 5 mile thing up on the top of the RV, which can connect to anything. But I also still get the use of the Wi-Fi built into the Microtech hardware. And so I can either connect that to my MiFi or another Wi-Fi, and I can plug the MiFi in via USB. Like, there's all these different options. And so that Microtech is actually capable of deciding which connection's best. I don't use it for this, but it's capable of – it does a little speed test on the connections I set up and I define. And then it just can switch between them for me. And so the other advantage that gives me is I can connect my laptops to the Microtech and I can do troubleshooting from outside of my network, outside my LAN, which is really nice. And that Wi-Fi Ranger is essentially the bridge that I sometimes casually refer to in the show as I'll say my bridge. That's actually part of the coolest part of the setup is that Wi-Fi Ranger with that PoE because it's one Ethernet cable that runs outside the rig up to the roof where the actual antenna is. And you look inside that thing, I swear to God, it looks like a Raspberry Pi inside a it is a weatherproofed clear acrylic case with antennas coming off the top. I swear to God, it looks like a Raspberry Pi inside that thing.
It might be.
And so that's the bridge. And so, that thing lets me, like, if I go to an RV park that has Wi-Fi, I can connect to that. If I park, you know, within a mile of a Starbucks, I can connect to that. So
you talked about Raspberry Pi. I have a new project for Raspberry Pi, and I was so impressed with this project because I don't trust. I've been pretty harsh on the Raspberry Pi over and over, right? And I found something that the Raspberry Pi does so well that not only did I integrate it at the very heart of my house and replace something that was very local, I know, with a Raspberry Pi. I was so impressed about it, I designed the entire next episode of Ask Noah about it, and I shot auxiliary video to go with it, because it's that cool.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is it a project I've heard of before?
Volumio?
No.
Yeah. It's really cool. I'll let you look at the video.
Yeah, right, cool. All right. Beard, do you have anything you want to toss in on any of that stuff before we move on to another
Ask Error?
Okay. So, Relin Lawrence, hashtag Ask Error, what post-apocalyptic job do you think you would be best suited for? I'm going to go with you. You go first, Noah.
Enforcer. Have you seen my gun collection?
Oh, my God. Actually, if I could, I'd probably try to make it to your house.
Oh,
you know?
I have no joke. I have an apocalypse team. I've got a group of guys. I'm not kidding.
I'm no, you're not.
We go out, no, really, we go out to the lake
really?
In the summer.
You like practice.
Well, I wouldn't say practice. We just go out. They're the ones that were making fun of the sous vide thing.
Yeah.
But we go out there and we camp and cook and stuff. But we have a plan. Like the one guy, he has 54 acres of land. So we've got the land. I'm bringing the guns. We've got a guy that he's.
What is it about rednecks always planning for the fall of the government?
Oh, it's fun. It's fun. And it's funny because like we joke about it. Like if anything ever happened, like we'd be so excited that like we finally get to put this plan into action. But like, and I mean, there's practical things for it too, right? Like. A lot of it, you know, I look at like, oh, I want to build a power station out of batteries and see if I can power all of my stuff off of solar power. Well, then when you send me a telegram and say, you know, I'm thinking about camping out in my truck, I'm like, I got this down. Like,
it's true.
I've thought about it.
It's true. Yeah. You are my go-to sort of like I'm going to do something that is sort of post-zombie apocalypse guy.
Right.
All right, Beard, I'll give you a chance to think about it while I answer. I've decided I would probably either be some sort of like a resource trader. I think my first move would be to cultivate a lot of cannabis and then start selling that. Right? Because it's a skill I've never grown it, and I feel like I'd be pretty good at it.
I agree.
And so,
you have attention to detail.
And so I would grow it, and then I could use it as a currency. I could trade it for other things, right. And then I would get weapons that way and food and fuel, and that's how I'd get out to your place.
Exactly.
And then I'd bunker down with you,
right.
Where I'd sort of become like a lieutenant or a team leader, and then work my way up and eventually murder you and take over the whole operation.
Exactly. Wait, what?
What about you, Beard?
I just run a gun shop.
I'd sell everything with Raven.
What would you guys have for your superpower?
Oh, this is one of the hardest questions ever.
Not for me. I got it down pat. Really? You have to think about it?
Well, yeah.
I know exactly what I'd want.
Boy, I got two of them that I really struggle with.
Oh, really?
No, you tell me and I'll tell you how it's wrong.
Oh, invisibility. No, I could defend this to the death. Invisibility, invisibility, invisibility. If I could have anything in the world, it'd be invisibility. All day long, every day, I don't even have to think about it.
Do you just want to see naked people?
I would be lying if I didn't say that might play into it. But no, really though, it's the ability to go anywhere and do anything. Like,
yeah.
Go so far beyond.
Well, I mean, at that point, why wouldn't you just choose teleportation?
Yeah, exactly.
No. Because people act differently when you're there. From when you're not, when if they could.
So you want to snoop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love people watching. I love sitting in malls watching people. Now, if I could do that without like actively staring, like I love TV shows. I love movies. Yeah.
You know what I would do? You know what I would do? I'd sneak up on people and rip ass.
For real or like your fake one?
Both.
Okay.
Because either way, that's good. But yeah. I mean, if you could get a stinky one.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a classic moment.
Then you'd watch them blame themselves?
Yeah.
So what are your two powers? You didn't say.
Hang on.
Well, no, I want Beard to tell you why you're wrong.
Okay. Tell me why I'm wrong. First of all, I
want to know what kind of invisibility you mean. Do you mean like cloaking or do you mean like the ability to have people just not notice you're there?
No, I mean like you can't see, like you could touch me, you could feel me,
well,
but like you wouldn't
light
be able
passes
to see
through
me.
You.
But, yeah, light passes
but
through
you
me.
Could get that same effect by having an ability that allows you to manipulate people's minds to not want to notice you.
Right.
No, because I feel like that wouldn't work if you're talking about like one person like alone or one person like doing one thing or I don't know, just...
Professor X can do it. Professor X can be in the mall and he'll just make the whole mall not see him.
I guess. I don't know. I'd feel better if I was completely...
Yeah, I would rather have... Well, it just seems like there's more practical... Because then you can't be caught on camera, you know?
Yeah. Well,
the problem with that is, you know, that has its downsides too. Because what if you spill something on yourself? They're going to see the spill on you.
That's part of the thrill.
That's true. That's part of the challenge.
Yeah.
That's part of the challenge. Yeah.
Not to bump into anything.
So what
if
you're
they
saying?
They start walking towards you. You got to move, and you got to ebb, and you got to flow in the right direction. Because if you go one way,
the whole thing's blown. If you get a milkshake on your chest.
So what you're saying is that you like risky sex.
No, he wants to
go back to the pervert.
Because that's what it's for, dude.
I mean, I'm not stamping that out, but that's really not the value.
But that's I'm making comparison because you know risky sex. Part of this thrill is that you might get caught.
You mean that kind of risky sex? I thought you meant unprotected sex with a stranger.
I mean, you might get caught in that too.
Risky sex. all right. So do you want to go next, or do you want me to share?
No, you can go next.
Beard? Well, so, like I said, I'm really torn between the two, although hearing Noah's situation, it kind of makes me want to go teleport. Like, if you take out the perv angle, teleport's the superior way to go.
Disagree?
Because, like, if you want to get into places, mm-hmm. you just wait till the place is empty. You don't even have to get through the front door. You pop right in. You get what you need. You get the documents. You pop right out. You just became the world's Best Buy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could leverage that to make a ton of money. You could become the world's number one spy. You could pop in. You could get the secret recording of somebody and pop out. You know what I'm saying? Like, the thing about being invisible is you still got to get in there. And this is why flying, this is why I was going to go flying until we had this conversation, because I'm like, the thrill of flying would change my life, right? Yeah. I'd be like a bird. I'd be free.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I still got to go through the front door. I still got to go through a window. I still got to go through the vent. But if I can teleport, man, I could teleport right into the Oval Office, you know, grab a souvenir and teleport out.
I could walk into the Oval Office, grab my souvenir and walk back in.
Yeah, but if the doors are locked, you're screwed. Because you're just invisible. You can't walk through the door.
Yeah, that's true. But like at some point, it's going to open.
Plus, if you really want to get your perv on, just teleport into dark rooms.
Yeah, but like, I don't know why. But like, here's the other thing too. Like,
I don't know why you guys think that's what I'd use it for.
You could have so much fun. Like, somebody you want to get in, they like shut the door right behind them or whatever. So you just wait and just kick them, and they move like, what the heck? I swear to God, I just got kicked.
Yeah, I mean,
can't see anything.
I feel like what we should do is we could combine our powers together, and I could teleport you into places, and then I could teleport out, and you control people.
We're so set. But we got to know what Rikai's.
Yeah, Beard, what's yours? Maybe we got a three-way we can get going here.
Well, I got a couple that I would like.
You got to whittle it down, dude. I did.
Well, yeah, but it's really hard.
We all have more than one we'd like.
Yeah.
I would either like...
I'd like to be invisible and silent.
I would like telepathy.
Oh yeah.
I always want to know what people think. Always.
That sounds like a curse, dude. As a person who worked in IT and got to look behind the curtain a couple of times, I learned the hard way very early on in my career. That's way more of a curse than it is a blessing.
Let me tell you, as somebody who can read minds and has to pretend like you can't, it is the worst.
I mean, it depends. If you always have the telepathy enabled, is going to be horrible. But if you can selectively use it, it could be good.
I guess.
Yeah. Like when you're hungry, it quits working, you know, because you got hunger. So it's like.
Another one I would not mind would be probability manipulation.
So you just have a better chance?
Yeah.
That's such a gamer thing to say.
You basically create your own luck.
+5 to luck.
You tell me, if you could pick any superpower in the world, you'd modify the probability?
Well, when you're mining Ravencoin.
I'm invisible. I'll go steal his Ravencoin. He'll never know.
Yeah, I'll tell him.
But the thing is, Noah, I would change the probability of you doing that.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, if it was that applicable, so like everything in life was always coming up Milhouse for you, I suppose that'd be a different story.
And then the other one would be... time manipulation.
That was my number four. I had invisibility as number three, and time manipulation was number four for me.
I feel like time manipulation supersedes everything else, because if you do something and it doesn't turn out right, you just
rewind time.
You rewind time, try again.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty nice. Like, you get caught, rewind time. That's true. But you still got to get through walls. You know, you still got to get over fences and get through doors.
That, and you could also be in multiple places at once.
Ooh, if you knew, I suppose if you had that as your day-to-day power, you'd get really good at working with multiple versions of yourself in the past and future, right?
Yep.
That'd be like your thing. That would be the power, really, is how you work with your own version of yourself to get things done. Oh, man. That would be great. Just think about all the people that like would just get totally screwed with it. Have no idea what's going on in your life. Like,
here, let's apply this to Noah. What if Noah, you know, had to do something, but he forgot about it?
Never. That never happens.
He forgot to remember something or something. He could just go back in time and ask himself.
Problem is, he'd have to remember he could go back in time.
I would forget that too.
The thing is, plus he forgot that he did it. He forgot, so he doesn't know he needs to go back.
You want
to
know where my memory has gotten to a pinnacle? I'll tell you a short story. A while ago, I was talking to my mom on Telegram, and she goes, "Man, I could really go for a burger." I'm like, that sounds great. And she's like, yeah, you want to go out for burger? I'll take you out for burger. I'm like, that would be really great. She's like, all right, well, there's this new place that opened up and let's go here and have a burger. I said, all right, yeah, it sounds great. She goes, great, I'll meet you there in 30 minutes. I'm like, all right, yeah, that'd be fantastic. Close, tell her I'm go back to what I'm doing. Finish what I'm doing. I'm like, God, well, time for bed. Shut my phone out. Go to bed. Next morning.
Poor mom.
Gets worse. Next morning, I wake up. I wonder what mom's doing. Telegramming, doesn't respond. She's being rude today. It's ignoring me. Go back. I start going through my day. Get through the whole day. She won't respond to me. I can't figure out why. Why won't she talk to me? So I start calling her. She won't answer the phone. Jeez, she's being so rude. I don't understand. Finally, like 2 days later, she answers the phone. What? I'm like, you're ignoring me. She goes, you got to be kidding me. You don't even have the gumption to apologize? For what? You're the one that's been ignoring me for 3 days. I sat at the restaurant for... And then I'm thinking, I don't even know what she's talking about.
Got to go scroll back through your Telegram history.
Yes! And then I'm like, son of a gun, I did say I was going to meet her.
Oh, man.
So for anyone that ever tells me, like, oh, you forgot because you just don't care. That is not true. Like, I care very much. Yeah. I just have, like, a disability.
Yeah, it is a thing that it gets me, too. Like, I was really proud of myself for remembering to grab my recording gear today because I had, like, stuff going on this morning. I don't normally on this day have to bring all the extra, like, on-site recording gear.
Yeah, and I forgot my other headset, and so now I have to make you go back and get it.
Man. You jerk.
All right, send your questions in hashtag AskError, Telegram, Discord, or even better, the Twitters at Chris Elias if you want to tag me too. And we'll answer them on a future show. Hashtag AskError.
So, you know, Noah, that... When you got here, I was running Ubuntu Mate.
You were. I was really shocked.
What you don't know is between the time that you left my house and got to the studio, I mined a block of Ravencoin.
Whoa.
Nice, dude.
So you're using Ubuntu Mate to mine coin?
I am.
why Mate? Why not Windows? I'm just curious since you normally run Windows.
Because it's on the other machine that's running Linux.
Oh, okay.
No, hold on. This is you can't just gloss over that. Let's dig into that. There's more to that story.
Well, it's running Linux mostly because Noah offered to provide me with a hard drive for the machine as long as it ran Linux.
As long as it ran Linux. Oh my God.
Was it an SSD? Wasn't it?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like. So it's an SSD. So you really are desperate.
No, here's the thing. You want to talk about exploiting people, right? So,
wow, right?
No, because no. Here, watch me bring this home. So he spent thousands and thousands of dollars on this computer, right? Over months and months and months, he put the best graphics card money could buy, best motherboard. I mean, he spent probably months just planning it and then building it. And he gets to the very last thing, and we're putting the components in, and I was helping him assemble it. And he's like, yeah, I just don't have any money for an SSD. I'm like, you know, what operating system are you going to put on it? Well, Windows, obviously. I'll go get you the SSD if we can put Linux on it.
Okay.
And so, like, I provided the couple $100 with whatever the SSD was, but he, you know, like, we took over his, you know, what?
I'm amazed.
$1,500 machine.
He stuck with it. Like, you know, you figure, like, he could have given a good 3 month college try and then been like, that's...
He is true to his, yeah, give him. But here's the thing, and he's got it connected to that. Well, how big is that display that you have?
It's a 34 inch ultra wide.
Dear God, dude.
Here's... Mate on a is, and it must be, is it high DPI?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, it's so high DPI that his old machine can't drive it.
Yeah, I see.
But get this, though, dude. Like, sitting down in front of his workstation has convinced me I will never, if I redo my setup at home, I'm going to get rid of my 3-monitor setup.
Like, really?
Yeah, well, yeah. I've got 6 monitors. I'm getting rid of them. I'm going to put 2 ultra-wides. It is as good as...
I love this one. I have one on the OBS rig.
Yeah, but his is like...
Yeah, I know.
I mean...
But this has shown me, like, having an ultra-wide on the OBS rig has shown me that it's the way to go.
It is. So I'm done with multi-monitor.
You're talking crazy.
No, dude. You got to see it in person, but...
Why not 6 ultra-wides? I mean, if money, like, say Bitcoin goes up to $500,000.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about it, 34 inches, so times 3, that's 90 inches. Like, the monitor be over, the, I mean, be...
Yeah, I definitely notice a solid productivity improvement the more my monitors goes up. So I don't know, because I've never been able to really scale that as far as I would like to. But if I can have monitors where there's just an application that right. I need to be aware of when a state changes.
Yes.
If I can have that and I can put that on a screen.
Right.
Then that mentally gives me the bandwidth to continue working on something else and use my peripheral vision mm-hmm. to monitor that other thing. Mm-hmm. And I'll just notice a movement.
Yeah.
And then I can go back to working on that. It makes me much more productive.
Yep. I have my six monitors. I've got my communication screen, which has Telegram, email, yeah. Slack, all yep. that stuff yep. on it. I've yep. got my main, whatever it is I'm working on. I've got a terminal screen. I've got, like you said, I call it a task monitor. And what I've gone to, Chris, you really get a kick, or Andrika, you guys get a kick out of this. They have a external monitor. I'll look up the exact name for you and we can put it in the show notes. It's just it's a mini display, USB-C, mini display, whatever. It has the same display that's in an iPad. So it's a 10-inch display.
And you can drive that on USB-C?
Well, it's DisplayPort. But you can get a USB-C adapter.
Yeah.
And it clips onto your laptop. So I have, when I'm video editing, I like to have two displays. And that's what I've gone to is I can have, it's not big, but it's enough that I can put I can have the clip window in there, or I can have a preview window and just kind of see what the video looks like.
And you don't notice any UI lag or anything like
that? None whatsoever. But the thing is, part of it is that, you know, I travel with a 12-inch laptop.
Yeah.
So for me, like, I don't have a lot of screen real estate to begin with. So you start editing. I mean, you're talking my editing window, my preview window is, we're talking 4 or 5 inches.
This is why I really don't, virtual desktops don't work as well for me. I use the hell out of them,
sure.
But being able to see it. And this is why that Dell 7720 Precision laptop is one of my preferred desktop machines, because it is
right.
widescreen,
yeah,
a 17-inch monitor. Yeah, I that's a pretty nice setup, Beard. So how is the mining on Mate going? Is that like, what are you mining? Ravencoin?
Yes, I'm mining Ravencoin, which is a new coin that is not on any exchanges yet, but I have 16,000.
Early days, eh?
But here's the thing. It's gaining popularity quickly, right? Like, yep. I've seen on forums and stuff, they're selling for, I think, 2 cents a coin now, even though it's not officially on an exchange. You can obviously buy them if you go and just make an offer.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about I'm at ravencoin.org, and funny enough, they don't really say right here on the front page what makes it interesting.
What is it? Raven RXT? What's the website that has the...
It says Ravencoin is a use case specific blockchain designed to carry statements of truth about who owns what asset. So I guess this is like a way to prove, like, I own a house, or I own this car. Like, it could be or asset could be money,
of.
Right?
Yeah, that's pretty much
well,
it.
Well, that's interesting. I'll toss a link in the show notes for people that want to check it out. So what makes you think it's going to be, say, maybe bigger than Monero? Because if I was going to bet on a cheaper coin right now, it would be Monero.
Well, yeah. First of all, it's supported by one of the members of the Bitcoin Foundation, so that's a good up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, it just seems to be a lot of community support around it, and the developers seem
and
nice.
It's ASIC resilient, huh?
Yep.
So that it's going to be like, it's going to remain in the purvey of GPUs?
As I understand it uses 16 different algorithms that are randomized for every block. So you can't really design an ASIC around it.
Yeah, interesting. They say the reason they do this is because ASIC hardware for Bitcoin, the transition to ASIC hardware, has caused the centralization of mining, and they don't want that to happen to Ravencoin.
See, I don't entirely agree with that assessment. If by centralization you mean that only a couple people can afford the hardware to mine it, then I suppose. But there's no one central entity. It's anyone could go. I mean,
yeah, you have ASICs.
Yeah, right.
But there's a not small barrier to entry to buying an ASIC.
Yeah,
like a performant ASIC.
Right. Anything that's ever going to have any possibility of being a return on investment in the next 6 months.
Yeah, you can go out there and buy a blocker up here, but it's not going to do much.
Yeah. And there's also hosted mining accounts now. What do you think of that one? Hosted mining.
I mean,
I know why I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, if they have the power, why wouldn't they just mine?
If you're thinking about it, really what it is you're banking on the increased value of the coin.
Yes.
Because obviously you're buying the cloud mining, I'll call it.
At today's price or whatever.
At today's price, right. And actually a little bit under, right? Because they're not going to sell you. They just keep the coins. So you're buying it a little bit under with the idea that it's going to increase in value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And for the people providing the mining, they're essentially, they're just getting rid of the hassle of dealing with the coins themselves.
Well, I mean, I would argue that they're selling them a little bit. So, like, let's say you're generating one coin an hour just for easy math. they're going to sell you that mining hardware at like 0.08 coins for 0.08 coins or whatever per hour. So they're going to make more than they would have made.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to make two-tenths of a coin more.
Plus, when the price dips, you still have these service contracts that are running, so they're still making profit on the machine. So
right.
Like
guaranteed money.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking into it, comparing the revenue, because you can break out what the return is versus hardware. And so when Bitcoin was like at 15,000, I was like, well, maybe I should sell some and try this just to play with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I never pulled the trigger. So maybe it's a good thing because it sounds like maybe Raven's the way to go.
Bitcoin is 14,199 right now.
It's going back up.
Yeah, so according to the developer, the main goal is to use a Bitcoin-like chain, which is focused on serving as rails for assets on that chain using tools like RSK or OmniLayer.
Hmm.
It's very early tech.
So it uses the X16R algorithm.
Yeah, which is a new algorithm.
The hashing algorithms are the same proven algorithms used in X15 plus SHA-512. So it's essentially, I guess, X15 and SHA-512 put together, and now they're calling it.
Well, no, it's a combination X16? Of 16 different algorithms. That's why it has a 16, and the R is for randomization.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I see. Yeah, they have it here in the white paper. The X16R hashing algorithm consists of 16 hashing algorithms operating in a chain fashion, with the ordering dependent on the last 8 bytes of the hash of the previous block. Huh. Well, how is the return? Like, do you get when it's really like this? You must actually be managing to successfully mine a few.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. The difficulty's gone way up. A couple days ago, I was getting like. I don't know, 400, 500 coins an hour. Now I'm getting like 65, but that's still a lot.
Yeah, but see that not only that, it also means that if the difficulty is going up, that means more people are mining. If more people are mining, it means that the interest in the coin is increasing.
Yep.
If the interest in coin is increasing, it means when it hits an exchange, it has a higher chance of actually yielding some US dollars.
This is really something we're watching. All these different coins come along. I mean, there is eventually, once these things pick up a little bit, there's real money here.
Very first episode I did on Ask Noah of cryptocurrency, I said, even if Bitcoin fails, cryptocurrency has... It's one.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a foregone conclusion.
And some of them are going to be scams. Some of them are going to be legit.
Yep.
And it's going to be up to the individual people to suss this out.
Mm-hmm.
You got to figure this is going to be a continued area of just a lot of rapid growth for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to be figuring out how serious to take all of this for a while still. Like. That's still
I would argue even that ship has sailed. Anyone out there that's like, yeah, cryptocurrency, that's just internet
really
there's 10 money.
There's still a lot of people saying that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I think those people are living in.
Well, there are people that probably never made. Well, there's a lot of people that have never made a dime off any of this.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course, yeah.
So the.
Yeah, those are all the people that set out to make money. That's why that happened.
Yeah, no kidding. It's the people that's really who's pissed off is the people that tried to make money. You're exactly right.
I just ran across a TLDR version of the Ravencoin pitch. Ravencoin is a way to attach valuable things to unique identifiers so that people can keep better track of them and trade them easier.
I mean, I kind of like that idea because if you think about it, how do you keep track of who owns a vehicle right now?
Yeah.
Like you have this piece of paper that's a title. And like that is weird. And like if I want to give you my vehicle, like we got to go down into the state and transfer the title.
Yeah, so it's applying the blockchain to asset trading, essentially.
I don't understand why we need to mine coins for that, though. Like, we could just take the blockchain portion of it and just say, we'll just have a public ledger of all the titles in Washington.
Well, mining is part of validating what is going into the blockchain so that there's consensus. And then once there's consensus reached, it gets submitted to the blockchain.
Yeah, but that's...
That's
in the form of transaction fees, but this is actually generating coins.
You can do it without mining at all, too, though. With isn't that what Ripple does?
Yes, yes. But this is what I have against Ripple. It fundamentally requires some sort of centralization if you're not going to do the dispersed, transactions.
Yes, which is sort
not
of
good.
The whole against the whole point,
right?
Which is how any legitimate coin.
Which is why Microsoft is interested.
Yeah, I think any legitimate coin that gets a lot of market adoption is going to have that.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it'll be one of the most fundamentally awesome things about cryptocurrency that we'll get lost out on.
I want Bitcoin to up the block size to 4 megs.
Yeah, it's got to happen, or it's going
to
die.
Yeah, and I don't want it to be a hard fork. I want everyone to just decide we're going to continue. This is going to be the future of But that's what I want to happen.
I guess it's just too immature of an open source project for that to happen.
No, they don't want it to. Like, the we could all decide that the block said they don't want it to.
Some people do, and they left.
Yeah, right. And that's and that's why we had a hard fork. But that's the problem, is that what you're going to wind up with is you're going to have these people that say, we just don't want to do that because it fundamentally increases the difficulty of being able to process transactions. So you have less nodes on the network.
Well, on the flip side, though, like, they did come up with an alternative solution. They just can't get it through.
Well, they did get it through. That's why we had a hard fork.
There is
Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah, there's Bitcoin Cash, which happened. I think that was the first major hard fork. And then there is SegWit. Did that ever take off? SegWit didn't take off.
It didn't, Segregated as far as Witness. I know.
No, I think it did.
Segregated
Witness does ring a bell. This, I have to admit, is where I sort of have stopped following with as much interest, because I simply just don't really give a shit about these other Bitcoin forks. At that point, I'm more interested in Monero, right, or Raven, yes, or
and
Ethereum.
And everybody else's too. If you look at what all the dark web stuff, that's all gone to Monero. Everyone is doing Monero now because it's a privacy focused coin, and it is designed in a way to be usable. And the other thing is, was it Zencash? The nice thing about Zencash is not only was it designed with all of the faults of Bitcoin in mind, they from day one said, we are going to set aside a PR budget, and we're going to go to podcasters and radio stations and different media entities.
Spread the good word.
Yes. This is why you should be using that. And so the state of New Hampshire has shops, like brick and mortar shops, that accept Zencash, because they've gone to them and said, would your pizza place accept Zencash? We're going to do this whole thing. That's the way to go, because you start building that momentum. And like, you always, what do you call it? The network effect, right? Once you get enough people in there, it'll take off.
I'll tell you, the boat that has been missed so far has been the legalization of cannabis for these cryptocurrencies. And it almost started to get traction here in Washington. The fundamental problem that every legal pot shop, medical or recreational, has in like the 20 states it's now legal, is it's still federally a crime.
Right.
And so the banks will have nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
It means no ATMs.
Yeah.
It means that means these businesses that are making tens and tens of thousands of dollars are all cash operations, which is not only rife for corruption and employee stealing, but it's pretty dangerous too. So all of these shops, once they become any level of significant, have to hire 24/7 security now too, because they have a building full of cash that they can't take to the bank. And so for a short period of time, there was essentially like a square-like thing. You know, you got an iPad on a stand. But the back end was all Bitcoin. You would go there with your credit card, and it would use BitPay, and it would float between their different pot shops as Bitcoin.
You're not buying pot; you're buying Bitcoin,
right? And then the transaction to them, and they could opt to get paid in Bitcoin. They could opt to split it. They could opt to go all cash.
Did the bank start putting pressure on BitPay then?
I think it was something that happened at the BitPay level that shut it down, but it started to disappear.
That happened with Silk Road too. Is, you know, people that were using BitPay to get money in and out of cash.
But that just seems like such a perfect use for a cryptocurrency, where it's like there's a huge market, there's a lot of money on the line, and you need something that runs adjacent to the industry but can still interface with it.
Do you know what, though? At the point that we have to start saying, let's take our currency and turn it into this other thing, use it for the actual transaction, then turn it back into our currency, why not just get rid of our currency and go to the other thing?
Yeah, but you could see a world like when you buy a game from Nintendo, what you buy store points first.
Yes.
Like you have Xbox Live credit that you buy, and then you buy the games with that credit. So you could kind of think of a cryptocurrency as sort of the store coin.
Sure.
And then you're just doing the transactions in the store coin, and then when the transactions are all complete and you want to cash out, it gets cashed out as your local currency.
Yeah. It seems like an okay interim step, but I don't see the point of the local currency.
I mean, it does seem like long term. Yeah. But then you could ask the same question if we have the internet and we can all participate in discussions online.
Right.
What do we need a republic for with an electoral college?
Well, I'll tell you. Well, I mean, I don't want to get too political, but I'll tell you why. Because democracy is two child molesters and a mother debating on the age of consent.